Welcome to the Envision Rise podcast. I'm the host and CEO of Envision Rise, Stacey Hagerty. Joining me today is Aaron Golub. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. For our listeners, Aaron is the first legally blind D1 football player. He played for Tulane and was also a free agent in the NFL. And now he shares his story, does motivational speaking, does all kinds of great things to help people see better how their own potential obstacles or struggles or disabilities can actually become a strength for them. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Well, we're going to start off. I'm going to let you talk now so that I'm not the one doing all the talking. Why don't you tell us your story? Tell us how we got to this point.
Yeah. So, you know, as you mentioned, part of it, I was born legally blind. And what that means for me is I have no vision in my right eye. It's completely blind. Very limited in my left. I see out of a tiny hole. Ended up playing football at Tulane University, where I became the first legally blind Division I athlete to play in a game. Was named a team captain and went on to become an NFL free agent. Now I'm a speaker, entrepreneur, so I run a couple businesses now, you know, one of which is, you know, me doing speeches and workshops with companies, teams, events all around the world. The other is, you know, I run a consulting company where I grow and scale businesses for other speakers.
First of all, let's talk about football. Let's talk about how you got to the point of being able to play at a college and a professional level, because I am sure that as you were growing up, you were probably told a whole lot of times all the things that you weren't going to be able to do. So how do you face those things?
Yeah, look, I think too many people take that no or that rejection and just live with it. You know, for me, I didn't play much, you know, growing up. I was a terrible athlete. I was, you know, picked last for every sport. I wasn't good at any of them. Sophomore year of high school, I was a third string junior varsity athlete. And most people would, you know, accept that and give up. And I decided not to. And I think that that's the key character trait is, you know, what are you willing to do that no one else is willing to do to accomplish the goals that you have?
And what did that look like? What did you actually have to do in order to get to the point where you could play college football?
I woke up at 5 a.m. every day, would go practice long snapping before school for about an hour every single day. Went to school, went to practice with the team, lifted weights for an hour and a half every single day after school, and then would contact every coach in the country, you know, every day after that in the evenings. And you know, I was just willing to do more than other people.
What was the response from the coaches like?
I mean, most people told me to screw off or didn't want to do with me. I would cold email them 10 times. I'd cold call them 10 times. I'd show up on campuses and wait until, you know, someone would meet with me. And it's not taking no as a no.
You know, I think that's probably a trait that a lot of people think they have, but when it comes right down to it, they really don't. I don't know a lot of
people. Most people don't.
I just don't know a lot of people that would not take no for an answer, especially if you're getting the door closed in your face every time you turn around. What was it that changed? How did it happen that you went to Tulane?
Eventually I got, you know, Tulane had a very strong interest and I went down for a visit and, you know, the coach was willing to work with me, willing to give me a shot and, you know, it was a perfect fit. And so, you know, I'm thankful and grateful that he gave me that opportunity, but was interested in having me come.
What was it like during that time? Were there accommodations that the team needed to make for you? What did that look like?
No, I mean, look, I was always in the mindset of if I need something, I would ask for help. And when I did need something, I would ask for help. And the team and the coaches were always willing and happy to, you know, do what I needed. At the same time, I didn't want to be treated any differently. I didn't want anyone to think that I got to Tulane to play football as a charity case or someone who didn't deserve to be there. My goal every single day was to prove that I was one of the best football players in the country and I deserved to be on that team. You know, I didn't want a ton of accommodations for a ton of things. I'm the believer of, you know, if I fall down, I fall down. If I get hit in the face, I get hit in the face, whatever, I'll figure it out. But absolutely, you know, I think asking for help is a super important thing. And when I needed it, I absolutely would. But I didn't, you know, need it every single day with every single action.
Let's talk now about what you ended up doing in your professional career. You went and worked in finance for a while, right?
I did, correct.
And you're not doing that anymore, obviously. No. You are out on your own. But talk to me about what it was like working in the world of finance. And, you know, did you feel like you ran into obstacles along the way? Or was that pretty smooth sailing compared to football?
I learned pretty quick that the corporate world was not the right fit for me. I don't do well, you know, taking orders from other people, which is why I run my own businesses. I at first went into a job out of college as a private wealth associate for a company where I was basically working under other financial advisors. And I hated it. It was a terrible fit. I was there for a year. You know, I wanted to stick it out for a year. And then I networked my way into a role as a financial advisor at other companies back up in Boston. And, you know, the idea of that was great. You know, the idea of being able to run my own business under the umbrella of a company was awesome. Now, there were tons of red tape there and things that I wanted to do that I couldn't do and things like that. Eventually learned that, you know, even that wasn't true entrepreneurship or wasn't true what I really wanted to do, because there were too many people that I had to still, you know, report to, and which caused me to find and do other things. You know, I think most companies want to do what's best for everyone, but obviously the corporate world runs slow and, you know, act slow. And if you need a change or you need something, you know, different, then, you know, it doesn't always happen immediately.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about some of the things that you discuss during your speeches, during your keynotes. Mm-hmm. What are some of the most popular topics that people request that you come and talk about?
Yeah. So, you know, I have really three main speeches. You know, first is achieving goals through adversity, you know, talking about the adversities and obstacles that we face and, you know, how we can overcome them to accomplish our goals. The next is thinking differently about disabilities, which, you know, is really a talk about how we perceive disabilities and how those, you know, don't have to define who we are and what does that look like? You know, how do we create that environment that allows people with different disabilities to succeed, and how do we, as someone who might have a disability, find ways to navigate that and succeed as well. And the last one is around leadership and leadership development, and, you know, talking what that looks like, how you can show up as a leader every day and turn your team or your organization into, you know, a group of leaders. You know, I think across all of them, though, I think one of the biggest themes is around gratitude and perspective. You know, I talk a lot about how, for me, I'm so thankful and grateful I was born legally blind. And if I could go back to birth and change it, I wouldn't do so. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, because it turned me into the athlete I became, created the relationships I have, created the businesses that I run, and, you know, turned me into who I am. And I think when you can find gratitude within the challenges you face, your life becomes better. You become happier, healthier, more successful. But it doesn't happen at once. It's, you know, not the easiest thing to do. But when you can find that little sliver of gratitude and perspective, you can use it to change your life.
I think the gratitude piece of it is so impactful. And I know there's a lot of talk about that on social media and kind of these little bite-sized pieces of be grateful. And that's not necessarily what you're talking about, I don't think. I think you're talking about something that's more robust than that, something that's deeper than that. Could you talk a little bit more about your stance on gratitude and how to develop that and how to work with it?
Yeah, you know, look, you can find gratitude in the little things. I'm not going to denounce that by any means, but it's about finding gratitude for the bigger challenges that you have, you know, in life. How can you look at a situation that looks terrible and find something that you can be grateful for it and shift your entire perspective? You know, for me, being legally blind, I was able to take a look at that and say, wow, I'm grateful for this because it allows me to do X, Y, Z. It allows me to impact others. It allows me to build these incredible businesses and have these relationships. I mean, even something like about a year ago, we adopted a dog and he's had a ton of challenges, you know, being a, you know, dog that had a lot of, you know, trauma before we got him. And finding the gratitude, although it's been challenging, I've learned to be grateful because it's taught me patience. It's taught me to be more patient and empathetic working with him and helping him. And so it's not something that I would have found, you know, or thought about that it would have taught me, but I feel like I'm a much more patient person now than I was 12 months ago. Mm-hmm. And so it's taking those situations that seem challenging and hard and trying to find gratitude within them.
Let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about disability and accessibility. Organizations are starting to talk a whole lot more about what they're doing to make their workplaces and even retail spaces and their websites more accessible to people with disabilities. The obstacle that I run into when working with organizations is people are afraid to say the word disability. They want to say every other word around it, but not talk in real terms about what disability actually means. What guidance would you have for organizations that want to do a better job of being a true partner to their employees and their customers who are experiencing disability, but are kind of afraid to move forward and not sure what to say, how to say it, or what to do?
I'd say just ask how you can help. Because the problem with that conversation is if you ask, oh, what's the right terminology and language, which transparently, I just think is ridiculous, because you ask someone, you know, what's the right terminology to say? Do you like disabilities, abilities? It's like, if you ask 100 people, you're going to get 100 answers. And whenever I speak, I say this every single time. I lived in a locker room for 10 years. You can ask me anything in the world. There's nothing you can say that will offend me. However, not everyone is like me. So just ask. Like, you can say disabilities, abilities, different abilities to me. Like, it doesn't bother me. But there are certain people that it might. Mm-hmm. And so just genuinely ask, hey, you know, I'm thinking of doing this. What is your opinion? Or, hey, is there anything I can do to help you? I mean, that's the number one thing that I tell organizations, is just ask how you can help, ask how you can support. Don't assume, but just ask, because you never know.
I think sometimes employers think, oh, it's going to be this huge ADA accommodation that we're going to have to make, and yeah, it's going to disrupt the flow of business, and it's going to take away resources. Most of the time, that's not even the case. Most of the time, it is something relatively simple and something relatively low cost that can actually support your employees. What do you think about that? Is that pretty accurate from what you've
experienced? Yeah, no, absolutely. I think overthought about way too often and not acted on enough. I think way too many think about, oh, what should we do? What should we do? And then, you know, they never come to a conclusion of, okay, we should help with XYZ. I think it's not as complex as people make it out to be. You know, I like to say, look, if you can understand what the problem is, educate the organization, educate the team on that problem, and then implement on that problem, then you can be successful. The problem is people, you know, do one of the three or none of the three, and then nothing ever gets done.
So what I'm hearing you say is, let's just have some honest conversations about this and not be afraid to talk about what's going on with somebody, whether that's a visible disability or an invisible disability. For leaders who want to do a better job, and I know you talk about leadership in some of your speeches, what are some of the skills that you think new leaders need to really be working on right now and really be honing so that they can be the best version of a leader that they can possibly be?
Yeah, I mean, being a good teammate, learning to have effective communication skills, effective listening skills, and really importantly is actually being a leader and not a manager. Mm-hmm. You know, most people that are executives or leaders act as a manager, but they're not a leader. And I think that's really important as well.
So define for me the difference between a manager and a leader. I think I know, but I want to make sure.
A manager is someone who just tells someone, do this, do this, do this, mm-hmm, and, you know, doesn't empower the employee or the person to accomplish the new heights and new successes that they have. Don't get me wrong. You have to, you know, certain times tell your team and your employees, hey, you know, we need to do this differently, or we need to do this. But are you actually teaching them so they can do it and do it better than you? Or are you managing them and spending your entire day just like time blocking their time and following what they're doing?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What advice would you have to a young person who is maybe in high school, maybe in college, who has a disability and is maybe concerned about what the rest of their life has in store for them?
Yeah, I'd say you don't need to be that worried. I think a lot of people think that everybody's always thinking about them and judging them and criticizing them, and that's just simply not true. I like to use the example of, you know, going to the gym. People have this fear of, oh, if I go to the gym and someone's going to stare at me because I'm out of shape, they may look at you for 2 seconds, and then guess what? They're going back to their 5 million other problems. Like, no one is thinking about you as much as you are. And although, yeah, there's challenges, but you know, you can learn to live with them. You can ask for help when you need it. You can find different ways to adapt and, you know, overcome those adversities that you face on a daily basis. I think that's really important. I think way too many people are stuck in this, I can't do this because I have a disability, or I can't do this because of that. And well, you know, look, all right, fair. Like, I can't drive. Also wouldn't be safe for me to drive, but like, what's the workaround? I'll call an Uber. Like, mm-hmm, there's other ways to find the way there. And sometimes you have to ask for help, and that's totally okay.
I think we've got to get comfortable with asking for help and realizing that no one's life looks the same as somebody else's. And whether it's you're driving yourself to the restaurant or you're taking an Uber to the restaurant, you're still going to get to the restaurant. It's just a different way of getting there. I think that's such a good perspective, yeah, for people to keep in mind.
Yeah, we all have differences. You know, they make us unique, and it's okay to have differences than other people. And it's just seeing that and understanding that is important, because if you don't see that and lean into it, then, you know, you won't get anywhere. If you take my disability, if you're legally blind and, you know, sit and say, oh, why am I legally blind? This sucks. This is awful. And then you never do anything. You never ask for the help that you need. You never pursue the jobs that you want. You never, well, I'm sorry, but at some point you need to stop feeling sorry for yourself. You know, I'm a big believer that I think organizations should do everything in their power to make the environment inclusive and allow people to succeed. I'm also a big believer that you as the individual need to at some point accept the fact that sometimes you need to ask for help, or sometimes you need to do things differently, and also take responsibility into your own hands as well. I think there's a double-sided thing there.
That's such an important point, and it's something that I feel like organizations have lost sight of, that in the early conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it started feeling like organizations were completely 100% responsible for the experience that their employees were having with them. And there was no talk about that other side of, we're all responsible in some ways for contributing to our own success, for finding the ways to speak up when we need help, and not just assuming that someone can tell we need help, or someone can tell that there's a learning gap or a struggle. How do you get to that point? How do you, as an individual, have that tough conversation with yourself and say, okay, I am responsible for me. I am responsible for the decisions that I make, for the way that I behave, for the way that I interact with the rest of the world. It's a tough conversation to have with yourself when it's so much easier to say, well, see, I failed because of all these other things in my life that don't have anything to do with me.
Yeah. I mean, it's understanding that at some point the decisions you make affect you. And at the end of the day, your success is determined on you. Like, yes, the organization needs to help, but they can only do so much to help if you're not willing to act on your own and ask for help. At the same time, the things that you do today, the things that you're worried about today, you're not going to think about in 50 years from now. Like, you're just not. I think it goes back to that whole judgment piece. You know, a perfect example is when I was in college, one of my friends once, we were at a bar and he asked me, hey, when you meet someone new, and in this context, he specifically was like, when you meet a girl, do you tell her that you're legally blind? I was like, no. He was like, why not? I was like, I don't know. I don't think it matters. And he looks at me, he goes, Aaron, if you meet a girl and then you actually bump into her and spill her drink all over her, don't you think she's going to be really pissed off at you? But if she knew you were legally blind, there might be some understanding. Or if you walk past her tomorrow, you know, as you're walking to class, and you don't say hi to her, she might be annoyed. I was like, that's a really good point. It doesn't mean that I need to go up to everyone and say I'm legally blind, but it means that you don't need to hide it, and you can work it into a conversation and at some point let people know.
That's such a good example. I love that example. It may not matter, but it also provides context to things that may happen. You know, the idea of walking by the girl on campus and she thinks you're ignoring her when you literally do not see her. And if people don't know that, that's when you start to jump to conclusions and you start to think things that aren't real. And it would be perfectly logical for that, you know, imaginary ex-girl to think that you were ignoring her when she doesn't have all the information. So yes, please have these conversations with people. And like you said, it doesn't have to be every single person you meet. It doesn't have to be every conversation you have, but you've got to figure out who needs to know and who deserves to know so that you can build a relationship from there and understand one another better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Aaron, where can our last question, we always end with this question, where can people reach out to you? How can they find more information about your speeches, about your organization, so that we can make sure that they can invite you to their next event?
Yeah, my main website's aarongolub.com. My email is aaron@aarongolub.com. Feel free to reach out if I can help in any way, or you have a question.
Excellent. Well, Aaron, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much. And we appreciate you being here. For our listeners, if you need more information about Envision Rise, you can visit us at envisionrise.com.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Subscribe, rate, and review the show, and be a part of making a difference, because it starts with you.